Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring.
Hi, I'm Brian Lehrer, host of The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, bringing you a special episode of Political Party with Kelly Goff, a show about the people and ideas that are shaping our politics and influencing voters in 2016.
That is Carissa the Violin Diva firing up the crowd at the world-famous Apollo Theater. Some of the biggest acts in music history have played there: Aretha Franklin, Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder. And yet we had a full house to watch one of the most entertaining performances probably held there in history.
Good evening from Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. I'm Lester Holt.
That is the very first presidential debate of the 2016 election cycle between our nominees, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. If you missed it, never fear. We're going to take you there right now. We'll play back the sound bites that got the most laughs, the biggest cheers, and of course the biggest boos from the Apollo audience, alongside commentary from our expert panel: editor-in-chief of Black Enterprise, Derek Dingell, political analyst Amy Holmes, founding editor of the American Conservative, Scott McConnell, and award-winning journalist for Univision 41 News, Mariela Salgado. Plus, you'll hear from Channel 7 Eyewitness News anchor Rob Nelson, moderating our lightning round of audience Q&A. This is Political Party with Kelly Goff, live at the Apollo. Hello, Apollo. That's better. That's more like it. Are you ready to dive in? All right, then let's go ahead and dive in. Derek Dingell, Black Enterprise, one of my fave publications. And you're also one of my fave journalists because you have so much experience with presidential candidates. You've interviewed President Obama, Mitt Romney last election cycle. So we all remember 4 years ago, the first presidential debate. Democrats and Republicans said he lost that first debate hands down. Mitt Romney gained about a 5-point bounce in all the swing states after that debate. And yet we all know Mitt Romney did not win. So do debates even really matter?
Debates matter. And I think what happens to candidates, it's the format that they become more accessible. Now, you talked about the first debate that President Obama had with Mitt Romney. But in terms of the town hall debate, he was extremely effective. So sometimes it's the venue. Sometimes it's the ability to connect with the voters. And in that forum, he was able to connect with the voters. Now, you only get one shot to make a great impression, so you got to make every shot count. So it's going to be interesting tonight to see how Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump acquit themselves in this format.
Here's how they chose to acquit themselves on the debate stage.
I will release my tax returns against my lawyer's wishes when she releases her 33,000 emails that have been deleted.
He has started his political activity based on this racist lie that our first Black president was not an American citizen.
We cannot be the policemen of the world.
And we are not going to sit idly by and permit state actors to go after our information.
To be president of this country, you need tremendous stamina. And I don't believe that Hillary has the stamina.
I think Donald just criticized me for preparing for this debate. And yes, I did. And you know what else I prepared for? I prepared to be president. And I think that's a good thing.
Scott, you've actually advised presidential candidates. You advised Pat Buchanan, who's drawn a lot of comparisons. His campaign has drawn a lot of comparisons to the one that Donald Trump is running. If you were advising Donald Trump, what would you be advising him to do tonight?
I would advise him what pretty much everybody else is advising him to, which is try to seem presidential. That is to say, be informed on the issues, or fairly informed. He's not going to be as issue dense as Hillary, and to be calm and to present an image to the American people that the country needs a change and this guy can do it, but he's not going to do it in a nutty way.
So he needs to show up as another person, is what you're saying?
I think in the course of the campaign, we've seen many, many different Donald Trumps. And so we want to see the better one now.
Amy, last we talked, you were an undecided voter. You're a conservative. You've worked for high-profile conservatives, and yet you're not sold on Donald Trump.
I'm a conservative, and I don't think Donald Trump is, actually. I think that he is an opportunist, and he's taken this opportunity much further than I think he himself ever dreamed to be on the debate stage tonight.
Okay, so let's just do a little bit of housekeeping here. New York is Clinton and Trump turf. We're here in Harlem. We're at the Apollo. Cheer if you're planning to support Donald Trump for president. Okay. You're a brave person. Let's give credit where credit's due.
That was so brave.
That was brave.
Everybody,
that's not easy to do. That's not easy to do. At the Apollo. At the Apollo. Good for you.
Seriously. Yeah.
Cheer if you're planning to support Gary Johnson. Okay, well, so there are a few.
Not so many pot smokers in the audience.
Cheer if you're planning to support Jill Stein. Oh, okay. Cheer if you're planning to support Hillary Clinton. This is clearly Clinton country. So with that in mind, Amy, you've advised elected officials. What would you advise Donald Trump to do tonight to reach out to particularly the black voters who did not cheer for him?
Well, it actually might surprise the audience to know that the black vote has not historically been monolithic. That back in 1992, when another Clinton was on the ballot, 17% of African-American voters voted for George Bush Sr., and the third-party candidate, Ross Perot. George Bush got 10%, Ross Perot got 7%. So that's 17% of African-American voters who voted for someone other than the Democrat. It might also surprise you to know that at Rasmussen Reports, I'm a political analyst for that polling firm, we're finding that over 20% of likely African-American voters are choosing Donald Trump, surprisingly. Well, I'm sure you don't believe it. You don't believe it. I don't necessarily think it will play out necessarily. Likely voters, not registered voters.
Okay.
So to reach out to, hold on, guys, I'm just conveying information. To reach out to African-American voters, I think he's going to have to articulate a real detailed policy agenda. It's not enough to say, what can you lose? Well, a whole lot if we elect the wrong person.
As to be expected, the candidates had very different thoughts on issues having to do with race.
Race remains a significant challenge in our country. Unfortunately, race still determines too much.
And we need law and order. If we don't have it, we're not going to have a country. Now, whether or not in a place like Chicago you do stop and frisk, which worked very well, Mayor Giuliani is here, it worked very well in New York, it brought the crime rate way down. But you take the gun away from criminals that shouldn't be having it.
Do you believe that police are implicitly biased against black people?
Lester, I think implicit bias is a problem for everyone, not just police.
We have to protect our inner cities because African-American communities are being decimated by crime.
Your 2 minutes of expired, but I do want to follow up. Stop and frisk was ruled unconstitutional in New York because it largely similar to black and Hispanic.
No, you're wrong. When you have 3,000 shootings in Chicago, you have to have stop and frisk.
Who disagrees with keeping neighborhoods safe? But let's also add, no one should disagree about respecting the rights of young men who live in those neighborhoods.
Mariella, do you think that he is an actual bigot, or do you think that he's an opportunist, which is... Wait, no, but this is a legitimate argument. There are people who believe that he's... I genuinely am asking this question. Is this a strategy?
I think it's maybe... I don't really know about him being a bigot because I don't know him personally, so it would not be for me as a journalist. I couldn't say he's a bigot, Donald Trump as a person, but he's married to an immigrant. He has a business with immigrants, and then he insults the same people that work for him. That's something that struck to me as, wow, he definitely is trying to follow a strategy to attract that base that he wanted it, to get to where he wanted to be. I personally believe it was more like a strategy. How do I win the primaries? How do I stand out?
say? I mean, do you have any thoughts, or do you know?
I actually don't think that he's a bigot. I think he's an equal opportunity vulgarian. He seems to sort of take a special delight and relish in insulting group after group after group. But I heard someone out here shout, "Who cares?" And part of me actually agrees with that, because whether who he is inside, we will never know. I think it's, you know, pretty uncharted territory for him as well. But it's the impact and the consequences and how it, you know, how it plays out. That's what matters.
Derek, you know, the distrust between communities of color and the police is an issue that's dominated this presidential campaign in a way I don't think anyone predicted 4 years ago. Democrats are often perceived as taking the black vote for granted. Actually, let me stop and ask, who here thinks the Democrats take the black vote for granted? Okay. That's a majority. Do you think that Hillary Clinton has done enough on the campaign trail to make the case that she, that the issue of police violence is one that's going to be a priority in a Clinton presidency?
Yes. I think that all candidates cannot stop campaigning until election day. They have to communicate a vision that shows that they want to advance the fortunes of African Americans. There's a number of things that have been talked about in this election, and I think one thing that Hillary Clinton did do, she came out first in terms of talking about the crisis in Flint, Michigan, you know, and that was communicating that she was connecting with the African American vote. She knows that she needs the African American vote to win, and the African American vote has gotten her to this position right now. But there are some other issues that have to be touched on. I'd like to hear more of a discussion about wealth building efforts. Right now, African Americans' net worth is at 11,000 versus the net worth of whites, which is at 141,000. That's something that has to be addressed. Business development needs to be addressed. At this point, 96% of African American businesses are sole proprietorships. In order to have an impact, we need to have more larger African-American businesses. So I think in terms of her discussion of moving African-Americans forward, she has to incorporate the business and the wealth-building piece, because that's critical. And we know that the Great Recession wiped out a considerable amount of wealth for all Americans, but the group that was most affected were African-Americans.
As the debate heated up, the candidates had this to say.
Under my plan, I'll be reducing taxes tremendously, from 35% to 15% for companies, small and big businesses. That's going to be a job creator like we haven't seen since Ronald Reagan.
The kind of plan that Donald has put forth would be trickle-down economics all over again. I call it trumped-up trickle-down, because that's exactly what it would be. That is not how we grow the economy. Donald was one of the people who rooted for the housing crisis. He said back in 2006, gee, I hope it does collapse, because then I can go in and buy some and make some money. Well, it did collapse.
That's called business, by the way.
9 million people lost their jobs.
NAFTA is the worst trade deal maybe ever signed anywhere, but certainly ever signed in this country. And now,
well,
you called it the gold standard of trade deals. You said it's the finest deal you've ever seen.
No.
And then you heard what I said about it, and all of a sudden you were against it.
Well, Donald, I know you live in your own reality, but that is not the fact.
I want to bring Mariella into this conversation, but there's probably no group that Donald Trump has offended more than Latinos. And yet he's actually polling better with them than he is with African Americans. And he has about 20% of Latino support, according to the poll that was released yesterday. Why is that?
Just because you're Hispanic doesn't mean that you have the same issues. We see multiple issues among the community, depending on the demographics, where you're from. And I think that that's basically where he's attracting the more affluent. In comparison to white American, he's attracting more the working men. Hispanic, in many ways, tend to be also conservative.
Especially conservative,
when it comes to religious values and abortion. And yes, it's like a mixed thing. You know, you want social programs, you want to be a Democrat. The Democratic Party is the one that embraces you in a way in this country, or at least that's the belief But at the same time, you have values, so they were more aligned with Bush. And then Donald Trump is not your typical politician. He's somebody who's not a politician, so anything Scott, is expected coming
Scott
from
wants
him.
To jump in here.
I do want to jump in. Donald Trump has not run at all a campaign of ethnic outreach to either the black community or the Hispanic community.
That's not what he said. He said, I went to a black church. I like the music.
What is he going to say?
I swayed to the music. You know, Omarosa was there. We all saw it.
Yeah. All right. No, I mean, you make my point. But he has run a campaign that is based on raising the job opportunities and the living standards of a broad circle of working class and middle class Americans, particularly with trade, with immigration, which, to the extent that immigration rates lower the wages of working class people, which it does by almost every conceivable study, and particularly all these trade deals. So there's a potential of people who looked at, say, Bernie Sanders' campaign against Hillary and said, you know, we don't have to have everything made in China. We can make stuff here. We don't have to have all the, you know, working class jobs, industrial jobs sucked out of the country. And, you know, I would be the first to acknowledge that Trump hasn't made that appeal specifically to black America, but black America should listen to it.
If you say that what's the worst you can do, that's not a policy. You know, that is, you know, have a discussion and just, you know, put aside the condescension, being condescending, and talk about specifically what you can do to advance African Americans.
Trump tackled it this way.
The African American community has been let down by our politicians. They talk good around election time, like right now, and after the election, they said, see you later, I'll see you in 4 years. And I've met some of the greatest people I'll ever meet within these communities, and they are very, very upset with what their politicians have told them and what their politicians have done.
Scott, can I address the elephant in the room? Because you're in the Apollo, it's a house of love, but I have to ask something directly here, which is, you have written about the fact that he has made the appeal to the white working class, particularly men, and I believe they have every right to be appealed to as voters, just as someone has the right to appeal to me as an African-American woman. But was there a way, as someone who's advised campaigns, he could have appealed to them without making the appeal focused on not appealing to everyone else? Was there a way he could have said, I'm your candidate, without making it extremely clear to that group that I'm not going to be the candidate of Hispanics, I'm not going to be the candidate of African Americans, I'm just your guy?
We have established that Donald Trump is an unconventional candidate. He doesn't have all the filters that somebody who's been doing this for 20 years does have. And it would be better if he did, but he would not have gotten very far in the Republican Party by being conventional.
You don't think there wasn't a middle ground.
Pardon me?
There wasn't a middle ground.
Well, can I jump in? I don't think it's a question of it being a middle ground. I think the answer to your question is yes. And when his campaign and the Republican primary really took off was when he was addressing the issue of illegal immigration, build that wall and we're going to make Mexico pay for it. He did not have to add to that Mexican rapists and drug dealers and criminals and, you know, all of that business. So, you know, there are a lot of, I mean, frankly, we have immigration law, and the president has a policy of enforcing immigration law. If Donald Trump, I think, had used more less loaded language, but identifying that issue, and that's what really made his campaign take off, I think, yes, he could have had a broader appeal. Same with the issue of Muslim immigration. The way that he talked about it was, you know, shocking deeply unappealing.
He would just come tonight and say, I apologize to the Hispanic community for what I said. We've never heard an actual
lots
apology.
Of Americans are very concerned about national security.
Yeah.
After San Bernardino, when you had an American citizen go to Pakistan, bring his bride here, and the two of them shoot up 17 people, certainly that was on the political radar, and Americans looked at the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and said, how did you drop the ball on these two? And if Donald Trump had addressed that concern without slandering, it seemed, the entire Muslim world, I think he could have gotten his message over in a much broader way.
Let me make a point about Trump and immigration. There is a very responsible argument made by groups like the Center for Immigration Studies, which is a think tank in Washington, that immigration rates should be lower. If Trump had said that, had quoted like a Center for Immigration Studies thing in his announcement, nobody would have cared. Nobody would have noticed. By saying something demagogic, offensive, racist, suddenly he started a national conversation on the issue, which would have been swept under the rug by the open borders crowd, which is on both the left and the right. It would have been otherwise swept under the rug. He almost had to demagogue his way to get people to listen.
But do you think the outcome is worth the...
It sounded like he was talking about every immigrant who came to the United States. It wasn't like, I'm concerned about the border. There's horrible crimes going on the border. People are getting raped when they cross and killed, which is true. We know it's true. And I'm very concerned about that situation. There are narcos there. There are coyotes that are doing this. We need to do... That wasn't the tone. The tone was Mexican are rapists, and then everybody else was in that bag.
He used that in the primary to tap into a fear to separate himself from the rest of the primary pack so that he can gain the nomination. It was a political
move. But the Republican primary voters were already very suspicious of the other candidates for having been squishy and soft on immigration, for supporting comprehensive immigration reform. Donald Trump didn't need to use incendiary language to appeal to those voters.
And that's what he did.
Correct.
But that's what he did. And he did it as an outsider. He did it as saying that he's not a part of the political establishment, so that there was already this frustration and backlash, so he played to that.
Mariella, you've actually served as a debate panel before. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine the pressure Lester Holt is going through right now. What do you think he has to do tonight, Lester Holt from NBC News?
I mean, I personally believe that the moderator has to let the two candidates talk, because people want to tune in to listen to what their proposals are. We talked about getting to the specifics, and I think one of the problems is that there's so much the moderator can do. So I think that if he asked the right questions and let them engage, people would really see the true candidates. And if Donald Trump is going to make, you know, is going to say something outrageous, he's going to have the perfect scenario to do it. You just let it happen.
Now, there have been those who have said that Lester Holt didn't speak up enough during the debate, but when he did, boy, he had a lot to say.
Mr. Trump, a lot of these are judgment questions. You had supported the war in Iraq before the invasion. What makes your judgment?
I did not support the war in Iraq.
2002.
That is a mainstream media nonsense put out by her. Because she, frankly, I think the best person in her campaign is mainstream media.
My question is,
I was against the war in Iraq, just so you put it out.
The record shows otherwise.
The record
Channel 7 Eyewitness News anchor Rob Nelson joined us to moderate a lightning round of audience Q&A.
With such low favorability ratings, this comes from Heather here in the city, with such low favorability ratings for both candidates, what can we do to bring more people into the political system in this country? Very easy question. Yeah. 10 seconds.
Try to get money out of it. I mean, go back to serious campaign finance.
Oh my gosh,
reform.
You're applauding him. Hey!
It's good. The
that
tide
was
is turning.
For the evening. That was great.
Voting registration campaigns help. Hispanics, we still are not voting as we should. In the last election, almost 65% voted, and so we need to do more. This Saturday, we're actually having an event to try to get people to register ahead of time and talk about the importance of voting. So I think that's a way of getting at least the Hispanic community doing more workshops and definitely this election, I think they will go out and vote more.
The last time during the 2012 election, a lot of people came out due to the attack on voting rights. So I think that's going to be an issue that's going to get people out. And also the fact that you can have an impact not only on the presidential election, but on local races as well.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the most important things we can do is if you know a good person, encourage them to run for office. And if you're a good person who cares, you should run for office. We laugh at the idea, but every Barack Obama started because someone encouraged him or her to run for office. So we need more good people running. Not just voting, but running.
And I would only add, you're asking what, you know, like sort of what we can do to get people to turn out to the polls and vote. I would also say that there's something that the candidates can do, and that's offer a positive vision for the future. And that's what drives people, is excitement about who they're going to be voting for.
I know tonight's about looking toward the future in terms of who will take over the country in January. I do want each of you to kind of complete this sentence. The Obama legacy is what?
It's a much saner American foreign policy, particularly in the Mideast. I think the Iran deal is an historic achievement, and no Republican would have achieved it.
Foreign policy?
I think Obamacare helped a lot of people get their insurance, and we saw that in our community. But as immigrants, we would have liked to see more with the executive actions to be done earlier when the Congress was united. But I guess at that time, Obamacare was more important, the health plan. But people felt like, you know, he could have done more on the immigration side.
Foreign policy, immigration, Amy?
I would agree with that. I think sort of the top line, President Obama's legacy being the Affordable Care Act and how that reshaped health insurance and bringing people, you know, in, under that umbrella.
Again, another vote for health care, sir?
The rescue, the financial and economic rescue of this country. So we were falling off the ledge, protected it. Health care, financial reform, and also the power of executive orders to, you know, shape policy.
Kelly?
I guess I'm going to take it in a broader way. The Obama legacy, which is not just one Obama, but I would say Mr. and Mrs. Obama, is sending a global image of the changing face of America, American womanhood, and also a larger message about what the image of the black family in America is and can be.
There's the power of office, then there's the power of example. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I hear that. Big hand for the panel, everybody.
Thanks, Apollo audience.
Political Party with Kelly Goff is usually taped with a live audience in the green space, WNYC's street-level broadcast studio. But this very special episode was taped live at the world-famous Apollo Theater on 125th Street in Harlem. The show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Ellen Rolfs, and Jennifer Sendro, with audio engineering by Chase Culpon. Special thanks to Ade Williams, Kanara Price, Ed Haber, Lee Hill, and Alex Kahn for production assistance. Kelly Goff is a columnist for The Daily Beast. You can follow her on Twitter at Kelly Goff. That's K-E-L-I-G-O-F-F. And you can get tickets to attend an upcoming taping of Political Party with Kelly Goff by visiting thegreenspace.org. Next up in the series, we'll follow the money. Kelly examines how much it costs to win a presidential election, who's paying, and what donors get if their candidate makes it to the Oval Office. Don't miss it. And thanks for listening.